This is another podcast while I drive, so I don't know how good it will be. I'll cover the basics of giving a lesson. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. And when I say giving a lesson, probably more years than I have cared to think of, 1980, early 1980s, so that's over nearly 40 years of being trained by various groups how to give lessons. The interesting stuff is that the good detail techniques I picked up early on at Melbourne University and from army training. This is just reserve training corporals, and then afterwards as I've done degrees. So I'm going to just pause every once in a while I actually drive through the traffic here and make sure that I'm concentrating. Yeah, and the time when I went into teacher training, they really didn't really look into the fine detail of it, of how you teach and how you demonstrate things. They just had more of a cult following. This is a great teacher. When you actually looked at it, they had a lot of personality, but not necessarily great style. Sorry, you'll hear some traffic noise as we go along here. I just hope I get back in time. So let's start off with a sequence. I've got an imagined sequence of teaching. And this is where you start from the start of a class, do a demonstration, do a few questions. That's really enough to cover in this one here. So the demonstration, let's think of a demonstration. They're demonstrating a Bunsen burner, you know, those little tubes, the gas and light coming out of it for heating up water. Very basic thing in almost all science labs. So you have your Bunsen burner, you describe that you're going to do this so people understand what the actual activity is. Is there any comments, any questions that someone would like to offer? Now, this may be as simple as, I've learnt about this in another class, or we learned about it last year, or my father makes them, or some piece of information that we'll gather. And then at this next stage is you have your Bunsen burner out the front. It's a physical thing. It's not something necessarily best to show in a book and then actually show the physical one. It's actually best to show the actual model that they do use in a way that they do recognise, so there's less translation between media. So if you've got something actual, it's best to actually show the actual thing. So you have to move them in an orderly way from their seats, their positions in the classroom, up to the front bench where you have your Bunsen burner, which you've already set up and tested before the lesson, that's connected to gas and operates here. Just focusing on this. I hope I don't go down this hill from the Blue Mountains. There is a process to move students from their position to the front bench, and most people say, I'll just come up the front, but there is actually a bit of a detail. There's several instances. One is that you don't want them to trip over as they're coming, and there's a sort of a basic, a drill. And so you say you'll move to the front by numbers. On number one, you will, on hearing the number one, you'll close your books, put down your pens and pay attention. Number two, you'll stand up and put your chairs into the desk. Number three, you'll quietly walk up to the bench, and then you say one, and all put all the books down and paying attention. Two, they all stand up with their chairs in. Now, it takes a little while in the first instance, but once they're trained to do this, they do it. You go, we're coming up to the bench in numbers, one, two, three. Now, the advantage of them standing up and going three is that they walked in unison in a concertina down in front of your bench, so you don't have students in the back walking too quickly and meeting kids at the front who are beginning to stand up and falling over each other. So they're all up the front there, and with basic equipment demonstration, you go through naming, identifying the names of the parts, upon each part, and you may, if you want to, at the end of that, ask people, point to a student and say, identify this part and then point to a particular student. So don't point to a student first and then say, identify the part. You ask to identify the part. So in this case, you'll have the gas turret, the tube, nipple connecting to the Bunsen burner, the collar, the base, the pipe, where the gas comes up, the matches and stuff like that. Once you do that, you explain continuously how, in one swoop, how you light the Bunsen burner, because it's going to be a one-phase operation of check the turret is closed, connect the inspect the Bunsen burner hole tube connections, check for holes in the actual tubing, then affix to the turret, and go through the process of lighting it. In the process of lighting it, incidentally, is that you light the match, hold the match downwards so the flame climbs up the match, and then hold the match beneath the rim of the exit of the gas, having closed the collar. Now, this way, when you turn on the gas doesn't blow out your match. The gas actually sucks the burning flame inside. Now, incidentally, a lot of people don't really understand how a flame moves. So I'll just go on this point here, then we'll go back into how you teach a lesson. The gas of the flame, the gas of the match, is the actual heat of the flame is actually causing the oil in the match to vaporize and turn a gas. So the actual match is a gas device, and the actual wood itself doesn't burn. If it burned, it would be a red color. It's actually not a red color. It heats up a little bit and goes a little bit red, but by and large, it's the volatile oils which gets expelled by the match. So you want to hold the match downwards so that the heat travels up the match, so it expends more oil. So you can actually tune the just waiting here, speed zone going down to 80. So you can actually throttle your match by turning your match at an angle. You then place the match beneath the lip of the Bunsen burner. Now, the important thing here is that the flame of the match, it's not so much the heat of the match, which is like I could put a red hot poker in a flame and it wouldn't light. I could probably put quite hot nichrome wire in a flame and it wouldn't light. The important thing is the flame itself. The colour of the flame is of the free radicals. So what in actual fact happens is that the actual chemicals in the flame are unstable of the match flame and go into the mixture, fuel-air mixture, and cause that to burn. It will ignite. So it's not the temperature of the flame going across it. So you could get, say, a very cold flame similar to alcohol, and it would still burn, even though you can actually hold a burning alcohol flame in your hand if you put alcohol in your hand, flame. So we've described what's going on, the technique, and when you've described the technique, although there is a temptation at this point in time to say, are there any questions? What you really don't want to execute that perfectly well, and when people most people have understood what's going on, you then fluidly demonstrate it. The important thing is not to speak while you're demonstrating, because if you speak while you demonstrate, that is proven to have reduced ability for people to understand. They're half listening, half looking, it is important that they see the demonstration without comment, and it's just proven that actually seeing motions and replaying the words in their head is a better way of doing it. After which then ask, are there any questions? Because indeed you may have an ambiguous demonstration, may have had things that are not understandable. So a quick question will clear things up. Again, when you're dealing with a class, you don't want to actually allow frivolous questions. Then after you've had the questions with them, you then ask a few questions for yourself of the various people to identify different parts of the Bunsen burner. So with a pencil pointing to different parts, you'll point to a different part, and then with your other hand you'll point to a student to just simply name the part. So they'll say turret, tube, gas handle, and things like that. And then you'll ask a question. After you ask a question, you then point to the student. So if you nominate the student, then ask a question, you then are signalling to the rest of the class, minus that student, that you don't have to pay attention. Now, after the student gives an answer, you then point to that yet another student and asks, was that student correct? When that's done, it's pretty well important, very, very important, almost straight after, is that the students replicate the actual physical activity. So if you've got a demonstration, you want to have the demonstration just before they actually physically do the activity. Now, when they're keeping notes, they're just looking at the... we're making very good time here. Well, when they're taking notes, I think it's something I've learned. It's really good to have the left hand, their lab books, where the right hand page of the lab book is for quality work. I'm actually making good time here. It's amazing. Okay. The right hand page's side of the lab book is for quality work. The left hand is for running notes, just notes that they jot down. Simply because then they can quickly take notes at a high speed, or the critical notes in a way they understand, and then when they go home, they can transcribe quality notes and questions later on, so they can actually quickly have a quick pace of a science lesson and in their own time and consulting with others, produce a quality rendition. So they can quickly hand sketch something on the left hand side and then produce a scientific diagram on the right hand side. In fact, when you're marking books, you can leave the left hand side with no comments, but the right hand side you can give marks and awards for. So the general idea is that you create a page for reprocessing the information that they've been given. So at this stage, just to repeat, so on the right hand side, I'll describe in a later podcast the way to actually draft things up to the Australian standard. There's a lab book drafting standard. It's not a universal standard. It's only called standard because it's a way of saying, well, this is the way, the best way we want to have lab books drafted. It's not been adopted by any educational institution or anything like that, but it's definitely the way to keep an orderly lab book and the most efficient, the cleanest way. And I've picked that up from, I've developed the standard, but I've used it in teaching in a Australian industry. And this way has been taking a range of techniques from some Russian scientists I've worked with and some very neat Japanese scientists I've worked with. And essentially, you produce like a mint golden, almost textbook style lab book on the page, in a remarkably short time by doing things to the Australian standards. We've got a few minutes here. One of the things is that you get down and you teach your overall lesson, then you have the questioning technique. I'd just like to go over the questioning technique. So the students have done their experiment, sitting down, written it down, and you have a questioning technique. So you have a preamble, a little story first, then a question for people to consider. You obviously start off by opening it up by, after the preamble, saying, are there any questions? I have a few questions for you. You ask the question, a simple question at first, with a fairly easy to answer question. You can have it by nomination, or you can select a student. The way that I use a way of selecting students, I try to get boy, girl, girl, girl. So there's an even mix on there. But I do have the students on playing cards, which I've written on, and you can just buy a standard deck of playing cards and wipe out the jack and the queen and that type of stuff using nail polish remover and 3M scuff remover. So it's sort of a stain remover from 3M, these little white pads. You should do it. Take a little bit of patience. Don't try and do too much or you can just rub ruts into it. It's good to have the silvery polish, the polish of the glasses. But using those, you can nominate a student. So you nominate a student. Now, the educational people say, look, you have to jump in immediately and tell the student whether they're right or wrong. You could ask the student to think about whether they're right or wrong. It's best to nominate another student to say, is he or she correct? What do you think? And develop it. If the student really doesn't know, rather than actually go, you could say, well, what do you want me to clarify? Or give them an ability to nominate another student. And if they nominate another student, that's a particularly powerful thing because students tend to know who does know in the class. So it's like this fantastic way of mapping out who knows what. Now, you need to, if you have a quick question and answer session, it's really good to guide that to a discussion. It is important at the end of a question and answering thing to make a summary of the key points that the people know, and give them time if they want to write that summary down. Also, if you're using the cards, you can if someone doesn't know, is not performing well, you put them in one pile. If they do know, in another. And so if they pass, they go back into the pile. You can get someone to say, would you like to select someone else, and give them a range of cards to pick any cards. The important thing is that the people are thinking about whether they can answer the question or not. Look, this is basically, I'm coming up to the into St. Mary's after this drive. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Please try some of those techniques. They are well worth it, and they really do work. Now, you'll not get a lot of positive feedback from other teachers because they're not into the micro. They're into sort of the ego, I'm the best teacher. They haven't actually really broken down what they've done. Now, I've had the advantage of... I've had the advantage of being able to be trained how to do this and watch it. As a sergeant, watch... Corporals do this questioning technique, and it's really essential because in the cases that I'm thinking of, if the people don't know what's going on, they can cause a lot of havoc, a lot of headaches, So there's that. Well, thank you very much for listening, and in the meantime, keep on doing science.